They want me to get rid of my dog. Can they do that?
I'm being fined for leaving my garage door open too long.
What are covenants? Do I have any rights?
Help, I feel like I've left the American zone.
If you want the answers to those questions, join me, Sue Bartholomew, and my guests on The Commons every Saturday from 2 to 3 right here on WBR Fairfax Radio. We'll ask the experts and we'll untangle the truth about what's left of our property rights.
On the Commons is a weekly radio show dedicated to discussing the many issues surrounding mandatory membership homeowners associations. Join us as we explore this relatively new world of controlled living, which includes condominiums, cooperatives, and both attached and detached single-family homes. Living in a common ownership development means giving up the American dream. It means giving up your constitutional rights and control over your most valuable asset, your home. Living in a homeowners association means leaving the American zone. This is On the Commons, and I am Sue Bartholomew. Today's guest has been an amazing guest, and every time he's on, I get emails from people asking me to please clone him because everybody loves everything Bill has to say. Of course, I'm talking about the one and the only Bill Davis. Bill, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, Sue. Thank you so much.
If we can clone you, we would. I know that a lot of people would love to have you cloned.
Well, thank you very much. That's very, very nice to say.
But I don't want to bug you too much. I love having you on. I don't want to bug you too much. So I'm so glad that you've made time for us today. And you've been busy.
Have been busy. You know, there's no end to despotic HOAs out there. It's it seems to be human nature for, you know, one person to decide that they need to decide what everybody else is supposed to do.
That's so, human nature?
Yes.
I think it's unfortunate, but I think we need to do something about that.
Well, you know, we kind of did. Because in a legitimate government, we have a constitution, and it's supposed to protect us in part from people using the force of government in a manner, you know, that's why we got restraints on government. But when it's ruled by corporation, it's deemed not a government, and yet it seems to have all the powers of government with none of the restraints. And so we do have a mechanism for doing it. I just think we need to focus on getting rid of these powers that have been given these, or at least the apparent powers that have been given these things, and focus on why we have a constitution to there's so much evidence as to why you need those kind of constitutional protections because of the abuses that go on in these HOA burdened subdivisions everywhere.
Well, my big question is, why on earth do we need an HOA in the first place?
Well, we don't. The developers, local government, and the vendors do.
Yeah, but the homeowners don't. And so I wish they would stop believing all the nonsense they're told.
Right.
Because they're told, oh, you know, it's going to protect property values. Well, we know that that's not true, and we know that when you do away with the powers of an HOA, the property values go up. So being lied to, people. Stop being lied to. Stop being gullible.
It kind of reminds me somewhat of the whole, you know, the time I grew up, workplace environments were filled with smokers. Smokers everywhere smoking. If you weren't a smoker, it was difficult to find a place free of smoke. And this isn't so much as a commentary on smoking as it is trying to draw an analogy. It's kind of like being forced to smoke because virtually all the property that you can try to get a home in these days, at least where I live, is burdened by an HOA. And kind of like Hollywood, the movies, and everybody was holding up, you know, cigarette smoking is almost a fashionable type of thing. Well, it took a bunch of lawsuits, a whole lot of money spent by an industry trying to prevent people from getting the knowledge and trying to, you know, going all out and trying to kill every lawsuit because they couldn't afford to have a single loss. And to me, that's kind of like what's going on in HOAs today, with a little bit of an exception, is that you really don't have a choice in many areas of the country. So it's sort of like you're being forced to smoke, except you're being, you have to have housing. And I guess it's kind of like the only air that you can breathe around you is filled with cigarette smoke. It's kind of problematic. It's the same thing for housing. If the only housing that's available to the bulk of the population is HOA burdened housing and it's bad for you, that's a problem. And what is crazy is that, kind of like the fashionable theory promoted by, you know, that industry in that era, it's the same thing as these vendor groups are doing with HOAs, trying to promote this as, you know, they've been very effective at claiming it protects property values. We both know it does no such thing. That's kind of like claiming cigarettes are healthy for you. You know, it's about as far away from reality as possible. And yet people repeat it without even thinking about it. And the danger is, I don't think everyone else really wants, you know, these other drones seeing everything going on in their lives through the illusion of an election. These aren't, you know, thinkers or decision makers. They're drones that have come to believe that HOAs protect property value. It happens of any empirical evidence to support that. It's nothing. It's like a religion. It's a religion more than a it is.
You're absolutely correct.
Adamant about it. You know, got to have one. Why? Okay. Well, where does it say that? You know, you agree to this. Really? I never even saw this document. Where did I agree to it? You know, if a majority of people or even just merely a board, how can I have been deemed to have agreed to that? That's just absurd. So it's really the dangers of representational type standing, and that was one of the things I was hoping to address today.
You seem to be moving in and out. Not a very clear connection. So I don't know if there's if it's a directional thing.
I haven't moved. I mean, I'm literally sitting in the same chair.
You're still there, huh?
Yes.
Yeah, I don't know why. I mean, that's the downside to cell phones. I know that in the summer, my cell phone does not work in the house because all the trees behind me are full of leaves, and I just don't get a signal. So if I go in the winter, it's better. And then everybody thinks, oh, well, it worked yesterday. Why isn't it working today? Well, because we've got all these leaves out there. But anyway, we're not talking about cell phones. We're talking about HOAs. And one of my pet peeves is fining. And anybody who's listened to the show on a regular basis knows that I would like nothing better than to do away with fines. We have a number of cases in the country that say fines are unconstitutional. In Gilman, it says you can't even disguise a fine by calling it something else. In other words, right, a rose is a rose is a rose. By any other name, it still is a rose. So calling it a charge is not going to change anything. It is still a fine. It acts like a fine. It smells like a fine. It looks like a fine. And it hurts you just as much as a fine does. So stop. You have some ideas on that. Let's talk about that.
Well, I do, and there's sort of two somewhat possibly related concepts. Fining and associational standing. So let's start with the fining. We've talked about this before, but what is the authority for fining? We've been told these are contracts. We've agreed to them. It's a contractual relationship. Well, you know, we have hundreds of years of case law and jurisprudence that says in a contractual relationship, you do not have fines. You can have something called a liquidated damage because it's the estimate that you've contracted for as to what a breach of the contract might, what kind of harm it might cause. And so the analysis is typically, does the provision, is the sanction imposed a liquidated damage? If not, it's an unenforceable penalty. Okay. And of course, this whole industry has wanted to, I mean, the thing about fining is to avoid court at all, right? They don't want to have to go to court.
Yeah. It's a dog case. One of the industry attorneys said, we don't need to clog up the courts with these dog cases. So we'll just fine them and make them behave themselves.
Right. And they don't want to have to go to court. They just want to be able to impose a fine,
right,
claiming it's their right to do so, even if something like that is unenforceable. So one problem with it, it's, you know, trying to bypass the courts. And of course, their public policy of trying to force everybody into ADR, where many people don't know this, but arbitrators are not obligated to follow the law or the rules of evidence. And so if you have an arbitration decision that clearly contrary to law, in most cases, there's absolutely nothing you can do about it. There's typically not an appellate path. The whole process is secret. And so, you know, that's why homeowners should never, ever, ever support. It's okay if you want to do it of your own choice, but there's a reason why the vendors want you to, you know, be compelled to engage in alternative dispute resolution. They want no record of the things that are going on and no real record of the decision either. So, but getting back to the point about fines and whether they're liquidated damages or unenforceable penalties, I think they're unenforceable penalties. I thank you very much for keeping in the Gilman case and the case out of Delaware, I believe it was, on your website for so many years and pointing to those regularly. We're actually citing those cases in a case here in Texas.
Yay.
Trying to address this fining issue in a case where an HOA decided it was going to just start fining a guy for who had just bought a house, who just received a certificate from the HOA indicating there was no conditions it was aware of on the property that were in violation or anything like that. He purchases the property and starts getting all sorts of threats. And the threats escalate to $50 a day. I think they were going to go to $100 a day. But the HOA decided to, quote, waive them. Nonetheless, he filed suit. And we're trying to establish here that fines are simply not permitted under Texas law for an HOA under the theory of either, you know, it's not a governmental body, as was pointed out in Gilman. And absent that, they don't correspond to liquidated damages of any kind. And that, by the way, that raises another issue of what's called associational standing. And I'd like to spend a little time on that today, if that's okay with you.
Oh, I'm all for learning, Bill. And I learn from you and the other attorneys who come on and share their knowledge and expertise with us. So I really appreciate it.
Okay. Well, you know, the courts are clogged with these HOA lawsuits. And it's a very unfair battle because the HOA is using funds it's taking from the very homeowners it sued under threat of foreclosure if they don't pay it. So the HOA gets funding. The restrictive covenants typically provide, or perhaps even other statute, and guess who wrote those, provide that the HOA can collect its attorney's fees. Oftentimes, the statutes, at least some of them here, are written such that if you sue to enforce a restrictive covenant and you prevail, you get your attorney's fees. But if you defend, you don't. And so you can see the very unlevel playing field this provides. Plus, if the homeowner counterclaims, guess what? The HOA is going to have an insurance policy that the homeowner's assessments have paid for that protects the board members and the HOA. And in the event there's a judgment against the HOA, ultimately, the board members bear no personal financial responsibility because the HOA, you know, provides indemnification for them, plus there's an insurance policy. And if there's a judgment against the HOA that insurance won't cover, well, guess what? The HOA gets to assess the homeowners to pay for it. In some ways, that's kind of like sovereign immunity without defenses that you would have from a governmental body initiating a lawsuit against you. But the one question is what standing, and this is what I'd like to get to, is what standing does an HOA have to sue you? Okay, because standing is a jurisdictional, it's basically subject matter jurisdictional requirement for parties to go to court. When an HOA sues, it can sue under one of two theories of standing. One is called associational standing. The other is direct standing. If a homeowner is actually not paying assessments, and I'm not talking about the situation where the management company is misapplying them for late fees and all sorts of other junk fees, but I'm talking about a homeowner actually not paying assessments, an HOA could initiate suit for direct standing because it's supposedly directly harmed, right?
Okay.
I realize on the East Coast, some of them have statutory acts that actually obligates the HOA to do something. Here, we don't have that. So what you have is a blind obligation to pay, and the HOA doesn't have to do anything for you or anything specific with that money. It just has a right to collect the money forever into perpetuity, okay? That's kind of a problem, as I see it, as far as a contract is concerned. But if you don't pay the money, the HOA would appear to have a direct harm because it didn't have the money it had seemingly a right to get. And so it could sue for direct standing in its own name. The other theory is associational or representational standing. And that's the theory that the HOA is suing on behalf of or representing other owners of property in the subdivision. Okay? And I think one thing that really hasn't been looked at a whole lot in these cases is In fact, I think we've talked about this before. The use of this word association is very problematic because it confuses the courts, buyers, sellers, juries, and others as to legislators as to what are you talking about? Are you talking about the incorporated entity? Or are you talking about a group of individual people? And that's why I really prefer referring to the organization as the corporation as opposed to the association to avoid muddying the waters as to who you're talking about, the people or the organization. When the organization sues, the issue is it suing in direct standing or representational standing? For representational standing, it generally has to meet the tests, at least in this state, and I suspect it's very similar in other states, but Texas adopted a standard for associational or representational standing that came from a fairly famous U.S. Supreme Court case in the 1970s. And if that case is Hunt versus Washington State. Well, when an organization asserts a claim or asserts multiple claims, it must have standing to raise each claim. And an organization will have standing to bring suit on behalf of its members when, number one, its members would otherwise have standing to sue in their own right. Two, the interests it seeks to protect are germane to the organization's purpose. And three, neither the claim asserted nor the relief requested requires the participation in the lawsuit of the individual members. Okay, well, that's an important observation because guess who the defendant's going to be in virtually every one of those HOA cases? One of its members. So now you have a problem where if the organization is suing not in a direct standing mode, but in a representational standing mode, and it's suing one of its own members, that means it's suing one of its members for alleged harm to other members. That's problematic. And there's been a number of cases that have commented about this and say that you do not have associational standing in such a case. Associational standing has, for the most part, been limited to injunctions, because it's presumed that an injunction inures to the benefit of all the members. When the organization is seeking monetary amounts, that's a little problematic to me because the homeowners have to show damages in order for the HOA to pursue in a representational capacity a suit for damages. And when those damages are vary among the members, it requires the participation of individual members. Because whoever the HOA is representing, they don't all have the same, you know, injury. And so that would deprive it of associational standing. But even more curiously, if the HOA was suing in a representational capacity for some kind of damages, why does the HOA get to keep the money? That should be going or distributed to the allegedly harmed members of the organization. Okay, so what is a fine? It's not really by its own name, Shu. It's punishment.
It is.
It's not a penalty. A liquidated damage. It's nothing more than punishment.
Yeah.
It usually doesn't correspond in any way to any alleged harm, and typically the HOA experiences absolutely no harm whatsoever, at least not directly, right? Because if you're giving somebody a fine because they didn't mow their yard, how exactly is the HOA corporation harmed?
It's not.
Is it harmed? If the grass is 6 foot tall, how is the HOA corporation harmed?
So how often does the management company get to keep the fines? I mean, we're talking about the owners don't get it. So they're fining or they're doing this on supposedly on behalf of all the owners. But how often does the manager just slip that in his pocket? There's no record of it anywhere.
Right. Well, I think it varies depending on who the management company is and also who the HOA attorney is to what deal they make with the organization. But how would you feel if, let's suppose you're a member of, I hate to pick on somebody, but it needs to be somebody everybody knows. Let's suppose you're a member of AAA or something like that. All righty. You're in a car accident with somebody else who's a member of AAA. All righty. AAA all of a sudden sues that other person and demands money from them for the harm caused to you. Right?
Okay.
Because they're suing in a representational capacity. Where did you authorize AAA to sue somebody else for you? And where did you authorize that AAA could keep whatever damages it got for itself? Isn't that what's going on in these HOAs? When they're suing in a representational capacity? So I think there needs to be some greater thought put into attacking some of these lawsuits on a standing basis, because just because the HOA says it can enforce restrictive covenants does not necessarily mean it can. It may not have standing in court to do that. So, again, an organization has standing to bring suit on behalf of its members when its members would otherwise have standing to sue in their own right. The interests it seeks to protect are germane to the organization's purpose, and neither the claim asserted nor the relief requested requires the participation in the lawsuit of each of the individual members or of the individual members. And yet it's always going to require the participation of the poor defendant. The case law on this has typically held that you can't get damages because those damages belong to the members, not to the organization. And that's why associational standing is typically targeted solely towards an injunction. And that's why I think we need to look at this again. I think a lot of this is going to go away, or you'll see a significant decrease in these HOA cases if the only thing that they can get is an injunction at best, if they're forced to prove up their standing, because they're going to have to identify at least two other people who are not the poor victim that are subject to the same restrictions, okay? And arguably, it's not germane to the organization's purpose for it to be suing some members on behalf of other members. That's contrary to the very theory of representational standing, where it's kind of like a class action. You represent people that are commonly harmed or suffer a same harm, although it may be to a varying degree. Okay, that's not consistent. That's why class actions are not certified all the time, because the class of, you know, potential plaintiffs either aren't sharing the same harm or didn't suffer harm or things of that nature. And I think you're going to have a real problem showing harm. There are several cases that say, you know, a violation of a restrictive covenant is a presumed injury. Well, presumptions are rebuttable. And can you show any actual damages because the grass next door was too tall? If you can, great. That's what the damages should perhaps correspond to. But the HOA shouldn't be able to claim those, and the HOA shouldn't be the one getting any money for the alleged harm.
I have a question, and I don't want you to lose your train of thought, but, you know, you said the HOA and the owners individually should be able to do that. In my governing documents, and admittedly mine are old and things may be very, very different right now in the newer ones, but in mine it says that any homeowner or the association has standing to sue to enforce the declaration. And I know that when I was on the board, and Frank and I were on the board, we'd have homeowners who'd come in and, I want you to sue so-and-so because he's doing this and that's a violation. And, you know, it was not something that I was inclined to use HOA funds for. It was not, you know, it was something that one person was offended by, and I wasn't going to charge everyone or risk everyone's money for that. And so I always pointed out, we always pointed out, that they had just as much right to go ahead and sue that person if they so chose to. And they go, well, I don't want to sue them. I want you to sue them. Well, you know, I'm not going to do it. So if you want them sued, you're going to have to do it. I don't have to sue them. It says you have to sue it. No, I don't have to sue it. I may.
Here's another issue of concern on this associational standing part. When they're suing, when the organization is suing and trying to collect damages, or just suing to begin with, you know, typically in a class, the class representative, by analogy, you know, you have to have somebody that leads the class or a group of people that lead the class, but all the class members will be bound by the decision. Well, how would you like it to find out that, oh, the HOA filed a lawsuit and got damages against somebody for the harm it caused to the other members, and that you're not entitled to a penny of it? It all goes to the HOA. Kind of like the AAA example I gave a minute ago.
Yeah.
And how would you like to be bound by the outcome of the case between the HOA and the other member, and not be entitled to any proceeds or anything else like that? It essentially is now denying you because the problem, of course, is if a member were to go sue to enforce the restrictive covenants, why would the HOA be bound by that decision? Or why would any other member be decided? Everybody gets their day in court. Coming back to the tobacco cases, just because Mary Lou lost doesn't mean that Mary Sue can't file a lawsuit, right? So this associational standing, because each of them were directly harmed, this associational standing concept is very problematic, and I think people need to look, especially attorneys that represent homeowners, need to look more at what's the basis for the organization getting into court. What is the basis for it being a plaintiff? What standing does it have? And should the suit be allowed to continue? You know, as simple as that. I've had routinely HOA attorneys in this state now try to, if a homeowner brings a lawsuit, the HOA tries to force the homeowner's attorney to join all the other homeowners in the subdivision. Which is kind of funny because the HOAs never believe that all the other homeowners are necessary when it initiates a lawsuit. And typically the homeowner that's suing is not suing the HOA for its role in a quote representative capacity, but rather what it's done, you know, directly in its own corporate capacity. But they actually use this as a defense mechanism to try and force the homeowner to have to pay a whole lot of money to have to sue and serve every other homeowner in the subdivision. And if they get an order that mandates that, then the lawsuit has to go away if the homeowner doesn't incur that cost.
So wait a minute. I'm sitting here in my house, and my next-door neighbor, the neighbor across the street, does something that really and truly is affecting me and my ability to enjoy my property, right? So I sue that homeowner because I'm the one who's, you know, I'm the one who's being harmed, and it's just between the two of us. They want me to go ahead and not only sue that particular homeowner, but every other homeowner in the association?
No. It's only if you sue the organization. The organization's attorneys will try and force you to have to join all the other homeowners in the subdivision, claiming that that the lawsuit requires the participation of all the other homeowners. So, for example, when they come up with, I don't want to give the bad guys more ideas on your show because I know they listen. They're already engaged. Yeah, I'm sure they're already engaged in this practice. But what'll happen is, for example, you'll get an HOA board that adopts a resolution to make it difficult or if not impossible to get records. Or it'll adopt, I have a case right now. In fact, while we were talking, that client rang in on the phone. That's one of the things that reminded me of it. The board members amended the bylaws to extend their terms. That was really the end of it. They adopted a bylaw provision to try and make it more difficult for the homeowners to petition for a special meeting of the members. And they adopted a bylaw amendment to force all the homeowners into pre-suit mediation. And curiously, the mediation was only for members who had a dispute with another member, a board member, or the management company. The HOA wasn't even bound by it in any way whatsoever. It was a total, give me to the management company, which I'm sure played a role in drafting the document. Why would the board members be interested in protecting the management company in such a fashion? And why would they be interested in the members of the organization having to go to pre-suit mediation in a divorce case, for example, because that's a lawsuit between a member and another member, if it's a married couple that owns the property? I mean, it was just so – when you just look at everything they tried to do, and they were really trying to create a despotic regime and extend their own terms. And, of course, this comes from people claiming, oh, we're just volunteers.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Nobody else wanted this job. Yeah, nobody else wants this job. That's why we want to extend our terms, make it difficult for information to be provided for the homeowners, and to make it hard for the homeowners to call a petition of the members, of the other members.
You know, the industry will be out there cussing the homeowners out for being apathetic and not taking their turn. And have you ever been on the board? Well, yeah, actually, I served several terms on the board. Good for you. It's like, well, if you were on the board, you'd understand what an impossible situation. No, it's only impossible if you believe everything you're told. And it's impossible if you don't do your homework and figure out that you're being lied to and send them packing. I want to go back to something else you said earlier. And you said something about depends on, I said the management company pockets the money, the fines. And you said, well, it depends on the agreement they have. Bill, you don't have to have an agreement. The board doesn't know what the management company is doing.
You're right.
The management company is charging things that the association doesn't have the right to charge, and they're pocketing that.
You're right.
The things that I have heard from people and the things I've seen in my own HOA, it's unbelievable. It's like a faucet that just the tap won't shut off.
There's a professor at University of Missouri, Kansas City. His name is Bill Black. He was a former bank regulator
But I mentioned, this is a known problem. It's called the control fraud problem. But I mentioned him because he wrote a book called The Best Way to Rob a Bank is to Own One. And he was talking a lot about the control fraud problem. But, you know, a bank is one thing. But the control fraud problem with HOAs is so much greater. And there's so many of them. It's a huge problem. You've got a management company that tries to get control or ownership of the insurance and certainly handling all any communications with insurance. They want a cut of proceeds from insurance for assisting. I have contracts like this in hand. They handle all the banking and all the communications with the bank. Yeah. And in fact, they frequently own the bank account, even though the board members think that the HOA has the bank account. They do financial reports instead of providing the bank statements to board members or officers. So in other words, that's an opportunity for shenanigans. They handle accounts receivable and accounts payable with no oversight. So you don't, and that's where we see all this embezzlement going on. I mean, how many, we only see the stories that make it to the news.
Yeah.
But you know this is going on everywhere, but there's been numerous large embezzlement cases. And guess what? The management company is the one promoting that trade group lobbies every year against homeowners having access to records because it basically assists in perpetuating embezzlement.
It's not just the big embezzlement. It's not, I mean, that, you know, you've got a lot of money and the potential for a huge sum of money to disappear. But you know what? You can just leave a tap dripping, drip, 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 drip. Pretty soon, those drips are going to add up to a whole lot. You miss the drips. People don't realize the drips that you keep getting. I'll give you a couple of examples. I used to hear from this young woman who saved up. She was an immigrant. She came to this country. She worked really hard. She saved up, and she bought a small, inexpensive condo in a blue-collar neighborhood. Very, very, very proud of herself. The management company, and I knew who the management company was, and I knew people who worked there, management company sent her a delinquent notice because and a penalty. Because they claimed that she had not paid her condo fees. She said, I paid you every penny you asked for. And so she was focused on that. If I owed you more, you should have sent it to me. I am not paying the penalties. I will pay the money. What this was is when you buy something and at the settlement table, the settlement attorney or the settlement agent is going to prorate all of the stuff. So if you buy, and usually they'll sell you a house or they'll settle like a few days before the end of the month, just in case there's a delay, that gives you a bit of a breather and you're not responsible for bringing a whole month's worth of money to the table. And so it's a way of keeping your upfront costs down. But at the time, they will prorate everything. So if you settle on the 25th of the month and the sellers had paid the condo fees on the 1st, you will have to pay the last 5 days worth of condo fees at the settlement table, but you don't owe the whole month. And that's done at settlement. So starting day one of the new month, that's when you owe your condo fees. They were going after her for the 5 days or 6 days or whatever it was, plus penalties and interest. And every time she wouldn't pay the penalties, they sort of escalated and escalated. And she would call me really upset. And I would say, look, you do not owe that money because it was prorated. She said, no, I owe it because I was there. I said, no, you don't owe it. She would not listen. Finally, after months, when this escalated, and she called me, she says, what do you mean I don't owe it? They had been charging her for stuff she was not responsible for. And when I told her, I don't know what happened. She just was really livid, and she probably went and killed herself, a few management company employees, which, you know, they probably deserve to be. But, you know, it's the little things when you've got people who don't know all this stuff, especially if it's right. a first-time home, and especially if you're, you know, if you don't know what's going on, you're vulnerable, and they're going to take it. So, you know, $60 here from you and $70 there from the other person, it's not a whole lot of money, but it adds up. And there's no oversight. Nobody's looking out for these people. We had,
right.
And we had some other situation in my association. And I, when I was on the board, I insisted that that be put in a separate account. And for 2 years, I would not vote on the budget until a separate account was created for the sewer fund. And that money went in. Well, Frank was concerned that the interest accrued by this fund would still stay in the fund. So we went and we were checking, looking through the books, and this was after we were both off the thing. And we're going through, and he's going, yes, interest, yes, interest, yes, interest. All right, that's good. That's Isaac Frank. Where's the principal? Nothing has been added to the account for a year or two. So, guys, where's the money? Where has all this money gone? They just figured, we've got the money here that's been there. We'll just let you worry about that. We'll keep the stuff that's coming in. Nobody will ever notice.
Yeah.
They never put it in the account. Who knows where? But the thing is, no board member. I mean, we were accused by board members for going in and digging up this stuff. But no board member, no treasurer went in and said, all right, what's going on here? Where's the money?
Right. Well, and the management companies often make it very difficult to do that because they handle every aspect of the reporting, banking, insurance. There's no legitimate business for its own interests would ever allow all those to be functions to be performed, for example, by a single agent or employer or employee.
We were not on the board. We just said we're coming in and that's what we're going to look at, period. End of story. And we got it. We said, have that
right.
ready. We'll be in at 10 o'clock on Tuesday morning. Please have that stuff ready and we're coming in to take a look. And we said it in an open meeting. There was no discussion. We went in, the stuff was there. There's the interest. Yeah, there's the interest. Where's the principal? Oh, you want the principal in there as well? Really?
Right. I've had personal experiences with management companies, you know, directly lying. Oh, that's all the records we have. It's about a half a box of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, well, after the lawsuit was filed, it turned out to be a lot more than a half a box, and they were seeking protective orders to conceal all the, self-serving relationships they had with,
mm-hmm.
like, the insurance provider and everything else. So, you know, they'll lie with impunity, and there's no reason to trust them.
Yeah, I hear from people all the time, I'm asking for this, I'm looking for the records. In fact, we just had Scott Wierzynski on, and he went to court to get a court order to be able to see what's going on in, you know, financially. And he's responsible for whatever happens, you know, whatever shortfall. As a homeowner, he is responsible. But they're still not giving it. Even with court orders, they're not getting that information.
Yeah.
And that's... absurd.
Because the agents hide behind, it's a corporate entity. We're just an agent. We're not the ones responsible. Yeah.
But in my governing documents, it says, and again, mine's one of the oldest and the first ones, and I kind of like those. If you've got to live in one of these godforsaken nonsenses, I kind of like the old one. But it said, you know, you are a member. You have a right to look at all the corporate records, books and records, all.
Right.
There's no withholding. There's nothing that is withheld in my governing documents.
Right.
And that's the way it should be.
Try to get a statute to limit the way you can ask for records, put all sorts of ridiculous constraints on how you have to ask for records. And then they've expressly provided in that statute, by the way, this is one of the statutes that's at issue in our litigation, has expressly put in that statute that it supersedes the any other law pertaining to nonprofit corporations regarding accessing records. Well, guess what? That's the Nonprofit Corporation Act law, which provides that the members have a right to inspect the books and records. So they got a new statute that says, that basically says, we replace the other one. In order to get access to records, you have to send a certified letter. If we don't give it to you, which you know they don't, then you have to send another certified letter. And by the way, before you sue us, you have to give us 10 days notice. And your only remedy is to go to justice court, which is the low end of the courts in Texas. And it's lowest level court. And file a lawsuit. And here's the only remedies the court can give you. And something a lot of people don't know is that if you don't prevail in justice court, or if you don't get the relief you're seeking, you know, normally you think you can appeal. Well, there's jurisdictional limits on what can be appealed from justice court. And I don't even know if the other side did this at the time they were promoting the statute. But basically, if you don't win in justice court, you get very little. And justice courts can't issue injunctions. So you can't, you know, even if you get a judgment in your favor in justice court, how do you force them to comply with the court order? And if you don't get a judgment in your favor, good luck with trying to appeal it because of the limited appeal for justice court. So it was clearly designed as a barrier to records, not to provide access to records. Because for years and years, this industry has tried all sorts of things to deny people access to records under the Nonprofit Corporation Act. They would say, well, you're not a member in good standing, so you can't look at the records. Or, you know, you offended me today, so you're not a member in good standing, so you can't view the records. You know, stuff like this. And
that's taking away a right you have. Is that legal? I mean, is that a constitutionally permissible to do that? Or
well,
not?
I mean, I don't know that it's a constitutional right to view the records.
And but it's a constitutional right to protect your what's yours, right?
Well, you'd think, but the problem is the Nonprofit Corporation Act kind of assumes it's an organization that you can choose to be a member of. And what's caused problems here is it's an involuntary membership organization. And so you have no choice but to be a member no matter how much abuse they deliver to you. Your only way to get away from it is to leave. And then after you leave, now what's your basis for getting access to records? I mean, by leave, I mean selling your property. So, it's a problem. One bright note in this arena is the Texas statutes actually provide or define a POA as an organization designated by the members as their representative. Okay. Well, I haven't found anything that does that, but that suggests that representational standing issue. And the problem for what we're trying to get through in our case is to establish this organization has not been designated as a representative of any member. And therefore, you cannot assert this statute against it to try to preclude access to records. And you can't put these I watch what goes on in other states with the legislative sessions and the bills that go in. You know, in the industry, you'll hear all this hype about abuses going on in HOAs, which we all know is going on. And then you get these industry-sponsored bills that talk about, you know, homeowners' rights or homeowners whatever that are supposedly to protect homeowners. And, of course, they don't. They're all compromised. And if anything, they're designed to leave the homeowners as soft targets and to have virtually no relief whatsoever. That's largely what happened with the status of legislation in 2011 in Texas, because for the most part, it became an enabling act. For example, they had a provision in there And I know I'm diverging a little bit off topic, but people need to be wary of what's going on in the legislature regarding these things. And these really aren't there to protect you. It's there to protect bad industry practices. So they have a provision in there about right to religious display, okay? Except it really wasn't a right. Instead, it obnoxiously provided that you were limited to a display not greater than 25 square inches. Now, if you think about what that is roughly a half a sheet of 8.5 by 11 paper. Okay, so it's not very big. Limited to a space on your doorway. Okay. Now, the problem I see with that is number one, why is the legislature getting in to this at all? And number two, why are HOAs being allowed to do this? I mean, I lived on acreage, and there before we escaped, there was an HOA there, and the idea that the HOA could march on your I forgot the other part of the statute. The statute was really an enabling statute, because it said it authorized the HOA or its manager to enter into your property and remove the display if it wasn't compliant with the statute. Now, think about that. That's since when did you authorize? That's like a trespass, and that's state action, because you're having the state bless this trespass by the HOA to come take property from you off your property.
That's right.
And worse than that, it's a religious display. You know, that's what the statute actually did. It wasn't a protection. It was an enabling act to allow HOA to trespass on your property, remove any purported religious display. Now, and you think about this, the industry people go, "Well, what else are you going to have to keep people from having 6-foot crosses on the in the front yard?" You know, and all these other ridiculous things. Well, number one, where is that happening? Okay, that's the mythical, unrealistic example used to compromise everyone else's rights. So they just imagine some ridiculous scenario. Two, the scenario they come up with can probably be dealt with other ways, as opposed to coming up with a state law that effectively confines a religious display to 25 square inches on your doorway. Okay, that's just, I mean, that doesn't even make sense. My doorway was more than 200 feet away from the street. The lot was 2.6 acres. And why on earth should somebody, you know, we were in a rural setting and that far away from the street because we kind of valued privacy. The last thing we want is somebody marching into our yard, claiming some violation or something like that, or that this new state law gives them the right to remove something like that. We frankly didn't have anything like that on our door, but I could just see Christmas time somebody coming in saying, "Hey, that's a manger display. That's a religious display, not a secular display of Christmas. So we're going to march in and remove it." Because we've all seen the stories about Christmas wreaths and HOAs.
Oh,
that's
the Ferrand's case. It was, yes. Their governing documents said you could have a sign that was no more than so many square inches. And so they put an Obama sign up and they got a Dunning letter. And, you've got to take this off and so on, and it's too big and it violates the covenants. Now, it said you could, it controlled the size of the sign, but it didn't control the number of signs. So they cut the sign in half, and they had the sign there in two halves, and they were in compliance. Of course, that escalated to the point where everything was gone in the neighborhood.
Right. I think Ferrand's got a wonderful result.
Mm-hmm. Oh, and I'm hoping they'll be back to talk about it, including, and this was going back, I wrote down Ferrand's as we're talking, their board members, a couple of their board members had to come up with $40,000 to pay for the deficiency in the judgment. It actually cost them money, and I love it.
I wasn't aware of that. That was new news to me. I'm really glad to hear it too, because, I keep hearing this volunteer thing, and I always have to come back with, thugs, rapists, burglars, they're volunteers too. And that doesn't mean that it's okay. You're not a candy striper. these guys do this stuff with the idea that they're not going to bear any responsibility for what they're doing, which actually incentivizes them to do it.
It ended up costing a couple of them, and so we'll get more of that. But, Bill, we're out of time.
Okay.
Once we get rolling, we get rolling.
We do.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, Shu.
Thanks to all of you.
Please check out our website at onthecommons.us. On the Commons is produced by OTC Multimedia Productions.
Well, I finally bought my dream home to enjoy retirement life. I've made new friends and buddies, lots of parties for my wife. It seemed that life was perfect, all my neighbors felt the same. Then along came death by CCRs, life's over, I'm fair game. Those petty rules and regulations, it's enough to make you cry. They're full of woes, no pink flamingos, someone tell us why. Slick managers and lawyers slither close, but they won't tell why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell. Now there's lots of open meetings close to justice for HO. Those arrogant board members say what they want you to know. The CAI and ULI will help you lose it all. But I wouldn't sell that dream home yet, the writing's on the wall. Those petty rules and regulations, it's enough to make you cry. They're full of woes, no pink flamingos, someone tell us why. Slick managers and lawyers slither close, but they won't tell why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell. Well, we're not afraid or stupid, all your threats mean nothing here. Time marches on, soon you'll be gone, united we'll be there. So put your rules and CCRs up where the sun don't shine, and enjoy those precious golden years, stop messing around with mine. Those petty rules and regulations, it's enough to make you cry. They're full of woes, no pink flamingos, someone tell us why. Slick managers and lawyers slither close, but they won't tell why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell. Why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell.